It's an interesting question, for sure. It kind of relates back to what we were just saying about introversion. I think there is, like, to a certain extent, like, people do have some parts of their personality which are fixed, but I think it's a lot less than what most people assume to be true. And I think when it comes to social anxiety, it's not like a personality trait, it's more of a situational reaction.
Welcome to the Social Expression Podcast, where you can discover how to level up your confidence, charisma, communication abilities, and all of your people skills to help you create that it factor, that magnetic presence that people are drawn to and can feel when they're around someone who has it. And whether it's in real life or online, in virtual meetings or calls, on social media, or anywhere that you interact with people, the end goal is to help you develop a powerful presence and skill sets that naturally bring quality connections and relationships with others, helping you expand your network and positive influence. Also, you can have more fulfillment and success at work, in social situations, in love, and in all of life. The Social Expression Podcast is presented by Coach David Hamilton. That's me. And this podcast is designed to help two types of people. Number one, ambitious, achievement-oriented humans who are skilled at what they do. They have sharp technical or creative skills. They're really solid in their hard skills in their career or business, but they're facing challenges with the softer or people side of things. And that's limiting their potential. And they want to break through and accelerate their success to new levels by developing a powerful, more magnetic presence, becoming confident and skilled communicators, and developing better leadership qualities too. Also, they can maximize their potential and success in work and life. And number two, people who want more out of life, but they're feeling limited by high introversion, struggling with shyness, social anxiety, having challenges with their confidence, and in connecting and communicating with others, which holds them back from the opportunities and success in life that they want. And so, no matter which category you fall into, as long as you truly want to improve yourself and your people skills, level your confidence and charisma, and develop a presence that positively influences and impacts people wherever you go, so you can create the relationships, the success, and the fulfillment that matters to you in life, then you're in the right place. All this information is 100% free, so if you like what you hear, please subscribe to and review the Social Expression Podcast. And now, let's get into today's episode. So welcome, everybody, to this interview. This is David Hamilton from socialexpression.net, and we've got Sean Cooper from StopYourShyness.com. And today we're going to be talking about a lot of different subjects on social anxiety. I'm really happy to be here with you, Sean, and I'm glad that you reached out to me to do this. Actually, you were the one who initiated, so good to be here with you.
It's good to talk to you today too, David.
Cool. So we've had a lot of exchanges over email, and I have definitely a lot of questions for you that I think will benefit a lot of people listening to this, and I also have my take on some of these questions, so we might as well just get right into it.
Yep, sounds good.
Cool. So first, I would like to hear some about your social anxiety story and how you've made a lot of progress in overcoming it so it no longer basically dominates your life.
Okay. So basically, when I was growing up, I had really bad social anxiety to the point where I couldn't even really like talk to people normally or make eye contact. In class, I would always be like scared to speak up or raise my hand or do speeches. And that basically continued up until maybe 3 years ago. When my social anxiety, it got to the point where like I was kind of sick and tired of having it. So I decided to figure out how to fix it. So I went out and I read a ton of books, a ton of audio courses, basically looked at almost all the information that was out there on overcoming shyness or social anxiety. And I decided to fix my issue. How about you, David? What's your story related to social anxiety?
It's funny. I was talking with somebody about this actually last night, and it probably goes back further than I thought, which was funny when we're talking about being in class. It's such a huge one. But really, a lot of it started when I went from elementary school, here in the States we call it elementary school, to junior high or middle school. And it's kind of on that awkward transition between, for me it was awkward because not only is it between that
transition into puberty, but I actually moved states to a different and lost all my friends and everything that I had. And, you know, I was on the shy side already as a kid. So when I moved from a state called Idaho to Colorado, I didn't know anybody, and I took to my studies a lot and hit the books, and was kind of pretty much nerdy, you know, pretty much the nerd kid. And over the years, I struggled with it, especially in class. You know, I remember having teachers call me out for being smart, and other kids would pick on me, and in a sense, rightfully so. I didn't ever agree with the teachers doing that, because they're kind of using me as an example to make light of these other kids who are having problems, you know, learning for whatever reason, or problems at home. I really thought that was unskilled of the teachers. And I think it really set in then emotionally in many ways. And it continued out through, 20s and 30s. Now, I'm one of those ones who saw other people and said, well, if they can do it, I can. And I kind of say that I made lists of like behaviors to correct into my adulthood, like make more eye contact, say hi more, smile more. And sometimes I would, but I never had that consistency that I wanted, because it was almost like I was faking it on the outside and not matching up with what I felt on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't even until the last few years that I came upon some programs and some work and really said, I gotta get to the root of this and really handle this. And I really dove in and handled so much of it. And then I decided to start a blog, socialexpression.net, and then eventually create a course and do coaching and mentoring around overcoming social anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I am here today. And, for me, I still experience it. Sometimes I experience it. And the more that I talk to people about it that don't necessarily have it, they go, I feel social anxiety at times. So everyone feels a certain amount at certain times. And obviously what we're talking about here is when it's all pervasive in your life and it really dominates, it's all you think about. It just like stops you from leaving the house or going to a party or getting a job, right?
Yeah. Well, I know like when I first started, there'd be like no chance of me like having any friends at all. I'd feel so much anxiety. Or even going to the grocery store and buying something from the grocery store, I'd feel extremely anxious. It was a long time ago, but I remember like I'd be like sweating and like shaking, having these physical symptoms of anxiety too. I think the people watching this are all at like different stages, maybe very socially anxious or maybe just shy in like a few situations.
Yeah.
But the goal is like to take the level of like social comfort that you feel and like expand that into every area of your life. Because I think almost everybody, even if they do have social anxiety or shyness, they do have like one or two people, maybe like a sibling or one close friend who they can talk to. So the idea is like to take that personality and like expand it everywhere.
Yeah, I like that. And that, like you said, everybody's at different levels, and some people have figured out how to break through some stuff on their own. They're still seeking more help. And some people, I get comments all the time on my Facebook page, YouTube channel, my blog, or through emails and stuff about people being at various levels. And sometimes they really have a hard time getting in the house. Sometimes they just feel anxious and they're able to bust through it, but they're tired of feeling that way all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They get really tired of it, yeah. So what do you think is the root cause of all this social anxiety stuff, if there is one?
Well, it's difficult to say. Like, nobody has actually nailed down like one single cause. The best ideas that people have been able to come up with is to say that it's usually a combination of causes. Parts of it are like genetic. There's some people have like a predisposition to developing shyness or social anxiety because of a certain type of sensitivity in their brain. And other parts are environmental, basically accidents in their environment. So for example, like you said that at a certain time in your life, you moved to a different state, so you lost all your friends, mm-hmm. and that caused your social anxiety to become worse or shyness. So I think a lot of people who do have shyness or social anxiety, they can trace it back to like some events in their life. But on the other hand, there are people who did also move to like different states and they didn't get social anxiety. So I think it's always like a combination of environment and genetic factors. And you can't completely nail it down to any one factor. What do you think about it?
I mean, from what I've seen and read is, for the most part, social anxiety itself specifically isn't, it's pretty rare that it's genetically passed on. I have heard of some cases and been emailed by some people saying, my mom has it, my sister, my dad, my brother, or, you know, a bunch of them have it. And so it's always interesting to say, well, did it kind of get bred into the genetics at some point on the line? So it was environmental and then it became. So there is that, but that's a smaller percentage versus people are predisposed to anxiety in general, maybe being a little anxious, and then that emotional experience happens, that social embarrassment happens in some way, and it gets burned into the brain, burned into our biology, and then it's, you know, not really, we're not aware of it when it happens. So there it is, and it's encoded in our system, and now it's running our world, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, I mean, it's interesting to note that what most people say is that it's some experience that happens, because you'll see a lot of people saying, well, this is just the way I am, and this is it. And I see a relation to the high sensitivity, because I was a highly sensitive kid, and I'm still a highly sensitive person. I pick up on things and emotions and intuitions and stuff, and I've been told this by many different people over the course of time that I do that, and I was like, and I didn't even know. And the more that I pay attention to that, the more I can realize too, you know, part of the introvert thing too plays into it as well.
Mm-hmm.
That the stimulus, you know, and environments too, and realizing that it can be an energetic thing, that it may not always be social anxiety, maybe an energetic thing, but. You know, I talked with a friend the other day, and we call ourselves outgoing introverts.
Mm-hmm.
I love that term, because we're still introverts, and we used to be shy or socially anxious, and we've learned how to not be, but we still need to recharge. We still need to have that downtime.
Yeah.
We're not the life of the party. Hey, gregarious, jumping out there, boom. You know, the classic extrovert who needs to feed the energy off of others around them.
Yeah, I think... That's definitely a misconception a lot of people have. The idea, the difference between introversion and shyness or social anxiety. I think I'm definitely still an introvert too. And I also tend to be like really low energy. So if I'm at a party, I have in the past like once or twice been like a high energy guy like at a party. But usually like I need like time to recharge. Like I enjoy solitary activities. But the difference between introversion and shyness and social anxiety is because one is based more in of like a fear of social judgment. The other is more of like a preference of what you like to do.
Yeah, I like the way you said that. Definitely. And the way you recharge your energy, and to see introversion as a strength. Because there's times I can get wild and crazy and jump around and have fun, but it's not the whole time, or it's, you know, it's going to be much lower than a typical extrovert.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I read over your course and I loved it, your ebook course, basically, your ebooks. And a lot of what you talk about is exactly what I talk about and teach,
mm-hmm.
With some minor differences here and there, just probably different styles or something. Now, I noticed that you've talked about how social anxiety isn't necessarily a personality trait, or what is, you know, is it... If we look at it from a disease standpoint, is it a disease, a disorder? What is this thing? And I know we talked about it a little bit here a couple minutes ago, but you know, when I get people saying this is just the way I am or have this disorder, you know, what do you think about that whole mm-hmm. subject?
It's an interesting question for sure. It kind of relates back to what we were just saying about introversion. I think there is, like, to a certain extent, like, people do have some parts of their personality which are fixed. But I think it's a lot less than what most people assume to be true. And I think when it comes to social anxiety, it's not like a personality trait. It's more of a situational reaction. It's basically a way that your mind and body have learned to react to different situations because it expects danger. I mean, basically what social anxiety is like a fight or flight response to what it perceives as danger. Like when you walk up in front of a room and you have to do public speaking in front of a lot of people, basically there's a circuit in your brain which is the reason why you get anxious is because part of your brain is worried about the disapproval because it relates back to survival. I don't know how much we can get into this here. But that's what science tells us is what happens. And you can see it in yourself, like observe like how you act in different situations. Like if you have a couple of people who you're comfortable around, you can talk to them fairly easily. When you're around people who you're not that comfortable around, you can't talk to them so easily. So if you observe your own behavior, you see that it changes and it fluctuates depending on the situation. And that means it's not really part of your core personality. That's my opinion.
Interesting.
Yeah,
Interesting.
how about you? What do you think of
Yeah,
the
I mean, I think that, if we're talking about, the disorder, I call it a condition, because I can see people getting so identified with I am, I have this, and basically that I am, in a sense, this disorder, that that becomes their life. And it's a tricky mental game, mental emotional game. And it's in a sense, we're filtering the world through I'm disorder and I'm always recovering versus, okay, when's the point where I'm going to let this go and say, depending on the progress made, it's like I've had this condition and now it's not me. It's really not me. It's not like my core personality, like you said. It might be part of something that I deal with, but it's not me. Just on the same token as, I don't want to get too philosophical, is that I'm not necessarily David. That's just the name I've been given, right? You could, like, just like you could change your name. Not that there aren't certain, behaviors associated with this and reactions in social situations, but it's the same thing. While certain, some people go to the store and they're just freaked out, and they could be driving and they're fine, and then vice versa, somebody's driving and they freak out, and then going to the store is easier for them. So what is, in different situations, it can show up differently. Because somebody's quiet at a meeting and they're new to a meeting and they don't know the social structure and the hierarchy and who's the boss, doesn't mean they have social anxiety. Maybe they're listening and checking out, when it's appropriate to respond, and their place in that hierarchy, as well, which isn't necessarily social anxiety, but it's easy to assign that to everywhere I go. Okay, well, if I'm not speaking, then there must be something. Well, let's take a look at the beliefs and story constructed around that and how that's filtering our realities. That's the approach I use. And I certainly, when I work with people, I don't work with everybody. I explain this is how I view it. And if you're on board with that and you think that that's, the route that's going to help you, then cool. And if not, great. I take a particular vantage point and looking at this as you are not this kind of embodied living story of social anxiety that has been burned in, we've taken on, through language, emotions, and definitely in our brain and our body disposition, or our body chemistry, even in certain regards. Which makes me think of the next question, which is, what do you think about, can be kind of a touchy subject, medication and treating social anxiety or even anxiety disorders. A lot of people are on medication when they are part of my, Facebook group or email me or whatever, and they're like, I'm on medication and I'm doing the therapy or whatever. And I have my own thoughts about it and curious what you think.
I personally never used anxiety medication to recover. Basically, my view on it is if somebody has extremely severe social anxiety, then maybe it could be useful. to see a psychiatrist. But typically, the approach that most people take is it's not a permanent solution. It's basically a temporary crutch to get you started on exposure and to, and they basically, if you are taking medication for something like social anxiety, the idea is like you slowly take less and less medication and not become dependent on the medication. It's kind of similar, I think, to how a lot of people need to use alcohol when they go to a social gathering to socialize. And this isn't just people who have social anxiety, this is like almost everyone. They need to drink to socialize.
The social
And
lubricant. That's what they call it, social lubricant, right?
And I mean it's okay to an extent, I guess. I don't drink much myself, but I think if somebody is watching this and they're considering taking medication, you should know that there's like a commonly accepted view that every mental type of everything wrong with you mentally is like a chemical imbalance, and you need medication to fix it, like depression or anxiety. And that's simply not the case. It's a lot to do with belief systems and your habitual thought patterns, and those can be changed. And there have been plenty of scientific studies that have like done combined like tests against placebos or mindfulness meditation, and they've performed equally well as medication. So
I've seen those too. And by the way, of course, we're not doctors. We don't give medical advice. This is just our opinion. So, but you have to check with your doctor. That's up to you. If you want to use medication and all that, that's totally up to you. But I'm of the same thing of these comp pharmaceutical companies, very interesting, in very interesting companies, what they do and how they make money. And sure, there are medications out there, especially for extreme things that they've shown, but the stuff is can be quite dodgy when it comes to anxiety and even depressive disorders at times, depending on what we're talking about. And I'm saying depending, but whether it's placebo effect or the fact that they were given a pill by an authority figure. And so because they know, I've seen this, a study on this where they say that because you're given authority, you believe it. And because you start seeing the side effects, you believe it, you're on it, and so you believe it's working. So interesting. And I'm not saying that's right or wrong. I think it's interesting to think about when we think about medication and the side effects and things like that as well. Now, if somebody is so bad in social anxiety and that's what it takes to get them up to the baseline level so they can start doing the work on themselves, hey man, no judgment. That's fine. But and I'm glad that most people agree, because I've seen so many times they comment and say, well, it didn't work. It worked and then it stopped. It didn't actually address the root of the problem. It's just masking the symptoms. It's not addressing the thought patterns, the emotional patterns, and really getting in there and seeing what's happening from inside themselves and kind of expanding the reality and pushing their into their challenge zone, out of their comfort zone, because it's more comfortable to be socially anxious than it is actually to challenge it. And it's not aware of it. And I always say, to the point you're at when you realize you have it, don't blame yourself for having it, that you're here. But if you really want to overcome this type of thing, you've got to take responsibility, responsibility to do it. And you've really got to commit. Like it's not a small commitment or necessarily an easy thing to do. But it can be done. It can be done.
I mean, I'm obviously not a doctor either, so what I'm saying is just my personal opinion, but it is based in research and like what I've seen working with people who have social anxiety. And what I relate it to is what I relate overcoming social anxiety to often is losing weight, because there's a lot of people who try to lose weight and they fail, and it's because it's not easy. It's simple. The process for losing weight is actually pretty simple. Eat less, exercise more, but it's not easy to do and to follow up with it because it involves a lot of negative emotions breaking old habits, overcoming past addictions, like psychological addictions.
Yeah.
So, yep.
Agreed. And emotional addiction. We get addicted to those emotional patterns, which is so hard to see when we're in it, because it's like a subconscious thing on a more subconscious level.
Yeah.
And getting more awareness and feeling into those emotions and actually experiencing them. And I say that we are so trained to run from our emotions and not experience them. It doesn't mean to act on our emotions in like a superficial way, like a dramatic like thing, but to actually experience what they are and to get awareness around them, and that we can actually have control over our emotional world in that sense, instead of running and hiding or popping a pill or going to eat McDonald's or watching a TV show just to get away from what we're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it. So we're getting to some pretty deep stuff here, and for you guys listening, interested to hear what you guys think, because this will be up on YouTube and various places to hear your comments. I had a question the other day from a subscriber, I believe, that they were asking, about the videos I have, and I have my also my course, the Dissolve Social Anxiety video course, video audio course, and you have your ebook course, about exposure work, and is that necessary to overcome this thing? Can you just do a course at home and kind of figure it all out, or do you have to do exposure work? Which means exposing yourself to situations directly where you experience social anxiety.
Basically, what my system teaches is that you do need to do exposure. And it's not just the exposure by itself. You also need to do it in a specific way in order to unwire the anxiety pattern in your brain. But the first step to do is to stop avoiding the situations which cause you to feel anxiety. And in my opinion, there's no way around that. Like, it is going to take pushing yourself into discomfort and becoming like becoming used to, like when you see a situation that you might have tried to avoid in the past or run away from in the past, you have to decide to push into it while still being afraid to do it. So like feeling the fear in your body, but still doing what you're afraid to do, whether that's public speaking or talking to someone on the phone or going into a job interview or whatever the situation is. In my opinion, exposure is like, it's not everything, but it's absolutely like a fundamental building block to overcoming shyness or social anxiety. What's your opinion on this question?
There's no way around it. There's absolutely no way around exposure. There's so many things like visualization and stuff and mental rehearsal, and there's something to it. But, and some people say, well, the mind can't tell the difference. Well, if the mind can't, the body certainly can. Because I know, I've been through it, and you have too. And if you think you're going to be able to sit home and visualize yourself out of social anxiety, it's not going to happen, or it's going to be the extremely rare case. It's not that you can't support yourself and do stuff at home, absolutely, to do that, but we have to expose ourselves, and I say we want to do it in an incremental way and ramp up. We don't, we don't want to jump into the most difficult thing at first. It doesn't make any sense, and that's the traditional cognitive behavior therapy behavioral hierarchy, and I use that in my program as well, amongst some other approaches, and I think that you have to do it, but it's a matter of what does it take for a human being to shift their patterns and change, and it's got to be, clearly it can't be where they're at, they can't stay doing what they're doing, and they can't stay believing what they're believing and feeling what they're feeling in a certain regard, or experiencing their feelings and emotions in the same way. It has to be done so it pushes outside of their comfort zone just enough so it's a challenge, but not too much so that it all collapses in and they give up.
Mm-hmm.
And then and that's how progress is made. And from everything I've read, studied, done, it's like, and there are ups and downs. It's not this constant curve. It's more like you make progress, you go back down. It's called a setback, and it's kind of like a wavy thing. But overall, you know, you're making progress over time. And that timeline, hard to say, depends on how long you've had it, number one. You know, what your experiences was of getting it and how deep that goes for you, and your commitment to doing it, usually over the course of years, to be honest, mm-hmm. for most. Not everybody. You know, I had a subscriber who said, hey, I'm unsubscribing because your free stuff helps so much. Great, you know, and I don't need to be here anymore. Thank you. A rare case, but, you know, this person may not have been a deeper level, and they clearly were very committed, very committed, and using, you know, my sources and some other sources and really going out there and doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 I think the exposure part is, like, it's not – see, the problem is it's not a very sexy marketing appeal to say you have to push into your fear, but no. That's definitely a part of it. And I think the second part, because, you know, basically what we both teach is like a cognitive behavioral type of approach. Yep. So that's like the behavioral approach. You have to change your behavior. Yep. If you want to get different results, it's like, there's an old saying, if you keep doing what you've always been doing, you'll keep getting the same results you've always been getting. So, and I think the second part is the cognitive approach, which has to do with like your belief systems, your habitual mm-hmm. thought patterns, emotional addictions, and so on. So, David, what do you think about what do you think are like the main types of beliefs that people with social anxiety have that they need to unwire along with exposure?
The main ones, and I see them all the time, are I got to say the right thing, aka perfectionism. I got to say or do the right thing, or I don't know the right thing to do or say. Mm-hmm. And thinking that, you know, and I need to know that first, and I don't know what it is, keeps them locked in kind of a double bind. That's one. Another one is everybody is watching me and staring at me, and they can all tell that I have social anxiety. And it's just it's absolutely not true. It's called the cognitive distortion of like an absolutism versus relativism. So some people might, when you say everybody, you know you're in cognitive distortion big time, big time. Because not everybody does. And that continues on a feedback loop of, you know, you could walk in a grocery store and see somebody laughing and they're on their phone and they turn and look at you as they laugh. And because you're socially anxious and your belief system is filtering for evidence, that piece of evidence gets pulled in when they were just happen to look at you and laugh, and then you get more nervous and they might see that, and so they react to that, and so the loop just goes on and on. Mm-hmm. So you did play a part in it, but initially you didn't, and you filtered it in, and then maybe they are looking, go, oh, that person looks nervous, whatever. They're not going to think they have social anxiety and shyness, or they may or may not think you're weird, and most likely people don't give a crap. They care more about themselves than they care about others around, unless it's something really, really drastic. And typically, you know, people with social anxiety are hiding away and not being seen, trying to hide themselves. So
yeah.
A lot of times they're not being seen. And that can be one too that troubles people, is I never get seen or this or that, because they are hiding away and doing behaviors.
Yeah,
like that.
It's interesting. Like
those are the two main ones that I see. There's more, but, you know, say what you think, and I'd like to hear what else you think.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting what you said at the end about people who have shyness or social anxiety hiding away. Because one way I've heard it described before is that shyness is almost like a coward's version of vanity. And basically what that means is like people who have shyness or social anxiety, they're very preoccupied with their self-image, how they're coming across to people. They're very keenly aware of like every little action they take. I remember when I used to have like really bad social anxiety, that would basically be the whole experience of self-consciousness. It's not so much that you're conscious of yourself, it's that you're conscious of how other people are perceiving you in the situation. So if you move your hand, you're very consciously aware of how your hand's moving. If you speak, you have so much attention on your voice that it sounds unnatural. If you walk, then your self-consciousness is basically messing you up because you do have too much of your intention focused on yourself.
Yep, too much inward. And that's the difference between self-consciousness versus self-awareness, I say. Because we can have raising our consciousness, raising our awareness, but what we're talking about is self-consciousness, that attention keeps getting directed back inward and trying to self-correct.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of outward to what's going on in our environment and being present.
Okay.
And kind of expressing who we are, right? That's what I heard you say, basically. That's the self-consciousness, is that vanity turned inward sort of kind of thing.
Yeah,
if that makes sense. Or
what do you mean by like self-awareness in regards to social anxiety?
Yeah, so self-awareness is being aware in the moment that something is happening, that this is a certain pattern, and not just the way things are. It's almost able to like jump outside yourself and kind of look while it's going on,
mm-hmm.
without necessarily trying to change anything. And by doing that, a change can start to occur.
Yeah.
So a way that I kind of think of this, and sometimes when I describe it, is that we have how we are being, you know, how we're behaving in a situation. We don't realize it. And then all of a sudden, we have that realization, but we're already acting like that. It's too late, right? Or we realize that we did something 10 minutes ago. Oh, I did that. But then that time gets smaller and smaller. Then it's 5 minutes ago. Then it's 1 minute. Then it's 10 seconds. Then it's in the moment. Oh, I'm doing it right here, right now.
Mm-hmm.
To the point where your awareness is so quick that when that pattern starts to come up, you just don't go there. You don't go there. You either go somewhere new, or actually you don't go anywhere at all. You just kind of subtract what happens. The belief or the emotional pattern that was driving it is no longer has a hold, or it's like a whisper. It's like a ghost in your mind, and you go, and you're very, very aware of it. Now, what that takes can be exposure, you know, because you have to go there to have the emotional reaction elicited, mm-hmm. to be able to be aware of it in that situation. And that's why it takes repetition and over time. So that's building self-awareness, and it's something that happens within, you know. It's not a particular exercise. I've gotten people saying, well, if I just do this technique, well, they have a great result with a particular technique, a particular mindfulness meditation or an emotional exercise. And then they want to hammer that technique, and this is the one that's going to get me there. And then they go out, and it doesn't work anymore. Well, the technique is not the self-awareness. It's a guide. It's a road sign to the experience of self-awareness. But eventually the technique wants to, because it's about building that self-awareness more and more within ourselves. It's the technique is never the actual experience, right? And that comes a lot from Eastern philosophy, and why mindfulness has come into actually Western psychology with mindfulness, cognitive behavioral therapy, acceptance and commitment therapy, integrate these things heavily because of the true benefit of them. Now, it takes, you know, I think we have a culture that is so bent on instant gratification. And people they're like, I get, I'm bored and I'm this or I'm that. Well, one of the best things I ever heard about being bored is that you just can't be with yourself without all this stimulus going in. You can't actually be with yourself. And you were caught in our minds. And when we learn to experience ourselves more, then that instant gratification thing goes away and our self-awareness builds. Mm-hmm. Going, oh, look at these other patterns. Look at these things I've learned growing up, cultural things, social things, you know, consumer things, buy this product and you'll feel better kind of stuff, that get in the way of us being more self-aware than we are.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think about, how do you feel about that?
I think it really relates back to the types of belief systems and thought patterns, that question from before. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, one thing I teach in my system as well is mindfulness meditation.
Great.
And the reason why I teach is because when you sit down, say for 20 minutes a day, and you pay attention to the thoughts running through your head, what happens basically is like it's almost like there's a separation between your thoughts. So the way most people live their lives is they are completely inside of their thinking. It's almost like a Right. goldfish swimming around in water. It's inside the water, so it can't see the water. In the same way, if you don't do any type of mindfulness exercise, Basically, you're living in kind of like a mindless way. You have no awareness of what your thoughts actually are. So when you do something like mindfulness meditation, you basically are able to step back from your thoughts and you can actually observe them from a distance. And when you do this for longer and longer periods of time, what slowly starts to happen is that when you have, like, let's say you studied David's program and you found out about perfectionism. Well, in the past, you may have had like a perfectionist thought, like, oh, am I doing this right? Or am I saying the right thing in this situation? Once you do meditation, when you have that thought go through your head, instead of believing in the thought, you have enough perspective from it to see that it's not really you thinking, it's more of like a habitual thought. The thought is just coming out of your mind. It's not you actually thinking the thought.
Right. And I love what you said there. I totally agree. And one more thing that I would add is that the thoughts that you think are you or that are yours aren't always even yours. They've been picked up from other spots and they're just repeating patterns. They're not anybody's thoughts in a certain sense. They've just been passed down for whatever reason. And we get into like talking about direct experience. People like Eckhart Tolle talk about it and stuff like that. And labeling things, and I think it's great stuff, and to notice that experiencing things directly, how that can really increase our self-awareness. I don't have time to get into it here, but I talk about it in my stuff, and I know you talk about it in your stuff as well. And definitely encourage people to check out your course that haven't checked it out as well, because you've got a lot of cool stuff in there and other add-ons as well.
And I just wanted to add, like, if anything I'm saying or if David's saying doesn't make sense related to mindfulness meditation, it's because you actually do have to do it for yourself. It's like an
Yeah, you have to
exercise. It's
experience it.
not an intellectual understanding that you can pick up just by hearing somebody talk about meditation. You actually have to like sit down and do the exercise yourself, do mindfulness yourself to actually understand like what we're saying.
Yep. 100% agree with that. And I just forgot what I was going to say. There was something that was supposed to be important, but it escaped my mind. Look at that. So I have a couple more questions here for you, and then what do you think? Wrap it up, or do you want to keep going? What are you thinking?
Yeah, a couple more questions should be fine.
Cool. Don't want to make it too long for you guys watching, because I know I can't stand too long interviews, but. Hope you guys get a lot out of this watching this, and it's been helpful. What about this idea of fighting your anxiety? Maybe battling it, fighting against it. What do you think about this concept? What's the right way to approach that emotional state when it hits us?
Well, basically, the right way to approach it, in my opinion, is through acceptance. So, what most people who have social anxiety try to do is they try to repress the feelings of anxiety or nervousness because they're afraid of other people seeing them being anxious. And that basically builds like a loop, a self-reinforcing loop where you're a little bit nervous and then you don't want other people to see you're nervous because of your social anxiety. So you become more nervous and more anxious, which leads to more symptoms. Maybe you start sweating or shaking, and it just keeps. Basically, if you try to fight it, or if you try to hide your anxiety, or try to not feel it, it tends to spiral out of control, out of your control. So this is why acceptance is such a counterintuitive approach to dealing with anxiety, because when you accept what you feel in the moment, kind of like how you said, direct experiential awareness. If you stay with your anxiety and you feel like what you're feeling in your body when you feel the anxiety, you accept the feeling, you don't try to make it go away. you say you accept exactly how you feel, then paradoxically, like it tends to dissipate on its own. What do you think about fighting anxiety?
Yeah, it's the same thing, and it's about, I mean, there's a couple different ways to approach it, is to kind of be an observer, but actually to feel into it, to get more of an experience of it, to get to know it intimately. And that's, to me, acceptance of it and working on accepting it, or allowing it even, we might say. And it's paradoxical, very much like you said, that it actually creates a change without trying to create a change, like the serenity, sort of like serenity prayer is like the foundation. Accept what you can't. You change things you can't, accept the things you can't, but at the same time, the accepting can create a change. It's almost one and the same. It's the easy, you know. There are times when, yeah, you can fight through it, but in the long run, it's not the most effective way or the path of least resistance, because we're talking about resisting and going against what's already in our system that we can't control, in a sense. It's already in there that you know, our biochemicals are firing, our adrenaline's rushing, our cortisol's up, all those things are going, depending on what level we're at, if we're near panic or whatever. And that's in your system, it's running. So what are you going to do? You're going to fight it and create more? Or are you going to just, here it is, and let it pass, you know, and see it as, okay, it's here. Let that chemical experience pass through, try to look at the beliefs as they go, see what's happening, how that might be connecting into it. And it can, you know, it happens so quickly that, in a sense, becoming more aware and accepting, it's like what used to just happen really quick, the time slows down and everything gets seen. It's literally like slowing time down, even though it's not, you know, if we talk about timing, perception, all this kind of stuff, the pattern that used to becomes, you start to see it, and it pulls apart. Yeah. What do you think about, last question here, what do you think about attractive people having social anxiety? I get questions on, you know, attractive people having it, struggling with it. Some people saying, well, because you're attractive, you know, shut your mouth, you have nothing to worry about, you know, poor you. I see some nasty stuff. What do you think about it?
Well, I've watched some YouTube videos of people who have social anxiety, and like I think it affects like all types of people, attractive, unattractive, equally. People who are unattractive and they have social anxiety will typically use their looks as something to pin their insecurity onto. So basically, they'll say, "Oh, I have social anxiety, or I'm insecure because of this physical feature of mine. And if I just looked better, then I wouldn't have social anxiety." And you can see this even in forums of people who have social anxiety, where you can see people if they have their photos and they're asking people like how they think they look. They look perfectly fine, like average, or maybe even they're attractive, but in their mind, they think they're unattractive. I think social anxiety and shyness is, there's a heavy correlation to insecurity and low self-esteem. And I think that's where that type of attitude comes from, where, you know, some people think people who are attractive don't have a right to have social anxiety. I mean, really, it comes down to your thought patterns and your belief systems, because you can even turn on the television, you can see a lot of the most social, outgoing, gregarious people may actually be very unattractive, but they don't have insecurities, so they don't have social anxiety. So, yeah.
And those unattractive people have accepted that unattractiveness, although with attractiveness too, we can look at a lot of things. Certainly there's physical attractiveness, and there are different things between men and women, but there's style. There's a lot of different things to play into it, that people can really up their attractiveness by taking care of how they dress, you know, like showing they take care of themselves and showing themselves to take care of themselves. You know, there's so many things, and independent on the looks thing. is definitely, you know, a common one too. I mean, there's a lot of common ones. Girls, I hear women say more than men that they'll be people think they're a bitch because they're quiet and they're really socially anxious inside, but because they're not talking, and people from the outside will say, judge and say, oh, well, because you're not talking and you're good looking, that means you're a bitch. But they might be totally nervous or anxious inside. It doesn't mean they, you know, the people without sometimes aren't. There are definitely those people out there. But it's something interesting to consider as well. And I've heard women say that in their channels and stuff as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So cool. I mean, I think this was great. I hope you guys out there watching, listening, got a lot out of this exchange here with Sean and myself. I encourage you to check out his stuff. And your URL again is
shyness socialanxiety.com.
shyness socialanxiety.com.
Yeah.
Cool. And mine is socialexpression.net for those of you that don't know, because I too am all about not only helping people abolish the fear of what others think and dissolve these negative beliefs, but also get to a more socially, expressive place to be.
Mm-hmm.
More themselves in the end and more relaxed with that as well.
Yeah. And
so,
I.
Cool. Do you have anything else you want to add?
I just wanted to say I took a look at your website, and like I'd highly recommend for anybody to check it out if you do have shyness or social anxiety, because you post like a lot of great articles and videos up there. Yeah.
Yeah, thanks. And I have – mine's more of a blog style. Yours is a little bit different style, I think, as far as when you come to the main page. And we're going to be doing a webinar soon, which I'm happy we're going to be doing. We're going to be – I guess we haven't decided quite yet what the topic will be, but something where we'll provide some good information and have some Q&A and have people be able to interact as well with us.
Yeah.
So looking forward to that soon. So you guys, please check out – Sean's stuff. You can check out my stuff if you like, as always. We'll have links around below this video depending on where it's posted, and that's it. Everybody out there, take care, and thanks again, Sean.
Alright, yep, it was good to talk to you, and I'll see you in a bit.
Yep, take care.
Hey, Coach David here. Thanks so much for tuning into this episode. For over a decade now, I've helped hundreds of thousands of people to improve their lives, whether it's via my coaching, courses, or my social media content. And so if you want to learn more about how to break through, how to up-level your confidence, charisma, communication skills, and create that positive influence and impact with a powerful and magnetic presence, also you can create success in work, love, socially, in all relationships and in life, then I want you to go on over to yoursocialclass.com. Again, that's yoursocialclass.com. And what I've done over there is put together an in-depth training resource for you right there on that page. It's going to walk you through the exact strategies that I had to learn and use in my own life to this day, and that I use with my own clients to help them create the change they seek with confidence, charisma, developing that magnetic presence, all the people skills to help them create the success they want in life. So go right now on over to yoursocialclass.com. Again, that's yoursocialclass.com. See you there.